So beautiful. That is titled JK Blues from the album, the 1993 album by Randy Weston, released in 1993, titled Volcano Blues. This was a collaboration with arranger and trombonist Melba Liston, and it is the most beautiful thing to listen to. Sadly, the sound of Randy Weston has been stilled. He died at his home this past Saturday in Brooklyn at the age of 92. But very much documented his contribution to music, especially African derived and African music. He was a scholar in this area. He did so much research, and his work reflected this sensibility for all of his musical life. Quite an imposing gentleman at 6'7", but he was always well received in Brooklyn. Brooklyn was his home. And I played his music quite a bit on this program. So here are some particulars about Randy Weston. There's going to be a wake service this Sunday, September the 9th, at Frank Bell Funeral Home, 536 Sterling Place in Brooklyn. The wake service is from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. with a visitation period from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. But his homegoing service will be on Monday, September the 10th at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine, a fitting place for such a big man, a big place for the people, and he was so popular. So the homegoing service is on Monday at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine. That's at 1047 Amsterdam Avenue. A viewing will be held from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. with a service from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Again, that is on Monday, September the 10th. We really have lost in so many ways a giant of music. Well, this is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we pick up from where we left off yesterday. We did not have enough room. We didn't have enough space or time to accommodate those of you wishing to participate in the discussion of the day. And I must say, I mean, we're not just congratulating ourselves here. It's just about noting certain things about this program. And in a way, an indirect way, talking about the importance of a station like this, PRN.FM. This story, which is now a major story. We're talking about Trump and all things Trump. You know, we were almost 2 years ahead of all the stuff they're talking now. We discussed this. So It is interesting that it has kind of exploded the way it has, but I just want to remind you, we've done this. We began this discussion a long time ago. And I keep reminding people that the very first thing I said when he took office was, he's not right in his head. And it took this long for the momentum to build, for the news people to discover what news really is, and to have the strength and the courage to begin this conversation, which we began almost 2 years ago. And so it is a way of saying that organizations like PRN, outlets like PRN, serve a very great purpose. We bring to your attention things that may not be, the agreed upon news subjects of the day, where everybody's talking about the same thing and you're still not learning very much. But to be ahead of very critical stories and issues. And beyond that, not just to bring your attention to these things, but to get you involved in thinking about them and the consequences, the likely consequences and fallout from stories like this. And to respect your participation in these discussions, because inevitably it will affect us all. The New York Times didn't do it. The Washington Post didn't do it. We at PRN did it. We were way ahead on this story and many others. You can think of stories that we've done in the area of health and the area of international relations. And at the time, they may seem to be, well, they're not the center of the nation's attention. But that doesn't mean that they're not important. They're so important that we break the mold, we way ahead on these subjects. So this is why I encourage you to support PRN. I'm going to be doing a specific fundraiser, and I'm looking to my peeps on Lead Stories to stand up and be counted as supporters, vigorous supporters of the station. So I'm planning it. It's coming on, it's on its way. But this is just a reminder that in many ways we are so far ahead of other news organizations and even, specialists in the news. We're far ahead. And we are doing the best we can to get you not just up to speed, but to get you ahead of the issue. And to involve you in the issue. As you know, one of the things I pride myself about on Lead Stories is involving you in the discussions, something that is absolutely discouraged. The experts want to tell you, tell me, tell us what the story is, as if we have nothing to contribute. We have no reason to explore these things on our own. So, more room today to add to yesterday's discussion, which was exactly the same thing about what do you do in a situation where, although they're telling us it's a lot of news, you're nowhere in it. Not as a participant, not as an observer, not as an analyst, They're taking care of business. We just need to sit back, get out of the way. No. Quite the opposite. You need to get in the way. You need to understand and contribute your own analysis. And don't be afraid about having to be correct. They aren't. They're not. So let us begin today by following up on what we did yesterday. What do we think about this unfolding story, which started out as a question on the theoretical question, although of course it is specifically targeted at Donald Trump. What is to be done when a president or chief executive is sending signals that his mind is, or her mind is not in the right place? What should be done? Should there be a standing provision, as there is in the Constitution, under Article 25, dealing with this matter of mental acuity and whether people, what should the people do in order to assure that the country is in, dare I say it, sane hands? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And let's explore this. Let's explore this. When we talk, though, let us be as pointed as we possibly can. We could take the scenic tour at some other time. What I'm hoping that we can do, what we can accomplish, is to train our sights on the specific issue here. How does this involve the people? Because even so, if they were to invoke Article 25, or Congress were to take any kind of measure, we still are not involved. We're still locked out of the process. What are your ideas about ways in which the people can have some degree of input in this, or how do you see the issue potentially impacting us, the people? Lincoln from Mount Vernon, you start us off today.
Hey, good day. How are you?
I'm fine, Lincoln. How are you?
Am having this little gum problem that I'm fighting through. I cut my gum with my toothbrush, and seems like it's led to some kind of a got swollen, etc. I have to take a different position on this.
Good, let's hear it.
I think they're all being so disingenuous. And I want to make a quotation from, what's his name, Dick Gregory. He said,
Now get to the
when
point right away. We're not discussing Dick Gregory. We're talking about how do
this
we
is
deal
my
with the
position.
issue? So get to it as quickly as you can.
I think that we should try, deal with it the same way we deal with when we watch presidents murder people, like the drone strikes that Obama used to kill all those innocent little children, children just like his own children. When we watch Bush kill a million Iraqis, I find it so disingenuous that we all worried about this crazy man, but we weren't worried about millions of people that these previous governments killed. The 500,000 children killed in Iraq by Madeleine Albright and Clinton. I think we're all as wicked as Bush, all of us, including people in the so-called progressive community. Because how could we be so concerned about getting rid of this man, but yet we are so silent about Bush 100 million
But you're
and
missing the
millions?
point.
No, I'm not
The
missing the point.
discussion is not about how is a head of state to be held to account for atrocities or what we would consider to be atrocities. That's not the question. The question at hand is, how do we, as a group of people, deal with a president, the head of state of the United States, who is seen to be off kilter? How do you rectify that situation, or is it at all rectifiable? And that's what we're dealing with.
I think you're missing my point. I'm saying to you, I don't care if it's rectified, because they did not rectify when presidents murder people. So I think you all deserve Donald Trump. That's what I'm saying. I think this country deserves Donald Trump, and I'll not change my position on that. And until we feel pain, we will not wake up. We have to wake up to the other things before we can wake up to getting rid of a crazy president.
Okay, but again, I respect your view, but you're off kilter. You're off track here, because the question isn't whether you agree or disagree with the actions of a president. And as you know, any actions of war, whether we agree with these actions or not, are sanctioned by, at least they are supposed to be sanctioned by Congress. Acts of war sanctioned so that the president has, quote, permission, unquote, to undertake even these awful acts that you referred to.
That's not true. The Iraq invasion was not sanctioned. And when Obama invaded Libya, that was not sanctioned either.
Yeah, but we're not discussing whether I agree with you on that. I'm saying that there are provisions for that. There are provisions for that. Whether a president is held accountable for not observing the obligation to follow those provisions or not, that is a matter, again, for Congress to take up. It's not that, they have no recourse. They do. They choose, in some instances, not to take any punitive action. But here, if there is a feeling that the president is unraveling, he is acting in a manner that should cause great concern about his capacity to lead and to follow the law as he leads, what do you think the remedy should be? That we're not discussing whether you approve or disapprove of a president's action. We're talking about, in this specific instance, what do you think the remedy should be, or do you think there's any remedy at all?
Then there should be a referendum, and there should be a provision where the people can come together and vote, and it should be a numerical thing by the people, which determine, this amount of millions say yes, or this amount of millions say no, yes or no, he or she stays or goes.
Okay. I want to respond to your question. I've heard it a couple of days ago. And I think briefly, what we could do is with any candidate who's applying, who is running for any kind of office, we have background information. We have all kinds of background information on these people. And there is a program that they use. I don't know much about it, but they use it with suspected criminals, people in the criminal justice system, to predict future behavior based on past behavior. That's one thing. Much is known about these people. And I want to say this. My question, and I think we need to look at, whether or not Donald Trump was selected because of his past. Really, there's an agenda that's being... He's actually accomplishing the agenda of the Christian right. He has appointed 53 judges. He's about to appoint a Supreme Court judge. He's doing his job for somebody, Beatrice.
So in as much as you feel very strongly about this. And I can't say that I could disagree with it. What should a formalized approach to selecting a president include?
Well, I think part of it should be an assessment of their mental and social ability. But we know these things.
Who will do that?
I would not leave it to the parties. I would think that it should be something from the grassroots. We should have organizations that address that. Bipartisan,
well,
not partisan.
I like your observation about the fact that in matters of sentencing of so-called criminals, that there are models available that tell a body evaluating or re-evaluating an offender whether their past can be used as a way of predicting their future, how they're likely to behave in the future. And on the basis of that, people can make some kind of an intelligent judgment about how best to treat an individual, how best to regard such an individual. And such a thing exists in the corporate world when a corporate board is looking at a CEO candidate. All these things are put into practice. They really do vet. This is part of the vetting process. They vet the candidate. Okay. So now you're saying that this should be a public process. Somebody yesterday suggested that it should be a kind of a referendum, that we should have, apart from the vote, have a referendum based on presumably the information about the person, the profile, the background being made available, which would then be added to, let's say the person was very successful at the polls, but that should not be the process. It should also include a vetting process in which the public has some participation. Is that what you're kind of hinting at here?
Well, somewhat. I'm thinking that this vetting should be done at the very beginning of the person, even when the beginning, when the person's even thinking, and we have time when they're thinking about running for office. A grassroots organization. It might have to be a nonprofit or some, it has to be at the base of the community.
Let's say, for example,
in the very beginning and
Howard,
having ongoing.
But hold on for me. This guy, Howard Schultz, he was the CEO of Starbucks. You may remember in the middle of all of that flurry about the arrest of two black men at Starbucks. And then he quickly decided that there ought to be these sessions held so that people could be more sensitive about how to treat black people at a Starbucks. He's considering running for office.
One of the people who was taken from the coffee shop.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, I didn't know that. Okay.
Not one of the people taken from the coffee shop. One of he was the CEO of Starbucks. And remember, they had these sessions held.
These trainings.
Right. So as CEO, the former CEO of Starbucks, he's considering running for office. Under your plan, what should happen right now?
If we had the organization in place,
yes,
we would do a study of his background, which is readily available. And then we would do our research, our study of his potential to accomplish the things that have to be pretty specific, the things we're interested in having done when he's in office, based not only on what he's saying, but on the basis of his current and past behavior, how he ran that organization. That corporation is very, very relevant.
I agree with you. The question is, how do we get that implemented? Is it to be entrusted to the party? Is this a separate and individual process that this vetting process would be before a vote or after a vote?
How way before the vote.
Way before a vote. Okay. So then we get
now,
closer,
like now,
closer
like
to
now, Eutrice, if we had it in place now, we'd be starting that process.
All right. I agree with you. So we're getting closer. And thank you for getting us closer to the issue. Thanks so much for your call today, Clara. Marty from Connecticut, you're on the air.
Thank you, Eutrice. How are you today?
Fine, thank you. How about you?
I'm doing well. I must confess up front, though, I'm not comfortable with this discussion the way it's framed. And I go back to Lincoln, I believe, to just give 2 points, I think, with respect to the question, to stay on topic. One, the Constitution already has provisions in it for an unfit president. You've used the terminology off-kilter a couple of times, and that's part of what I'm troubled by. When I look up off-kilter, I come up with not aligned or not in perfect balance, unconventional or eccentric. Quite frankly, those could be acceptable attributes or qualities for a president under certain circumstances. And in fact, if you go back through American history, all major social movements, the progress that we've made at the time the movement started, the people were considered unconventional, not in perfect balance with society, eccentric. From abolition to the suffragette movement, unionism. So I'm troubled when, and I have to confess, I don't always agree with our forefathers, but here, I don't want the public to make the decision whether, quote unquote, the president is off kilter. I want the constitutional provision for unfit with one, the vice president, and I believe it is 8 cabinet members, to propose that the president is unfit, and the president can contradict that, and they go to Congress and vote. I don't want the general public to be voting on that.
All right. Here's the thing I think ought to be considered. Off-kilter simply means with respect to the articulated goals and objectives of a group. If I live in a compound where everybody must wear blue on Monday, and I don't like blue, if I decide to wear yellow, in terms of what the community thinks or what the community practices as normal, I will be seen as off kilter. I'll be seen as
correct.
Well, that's what I mean.
Right.
People
that's not leadership per se.
Well,
I think Lincoln, in
a way it is. Because
Lincoln brought up the point that
the agreed upon contract is what is going to be serving as our reference point all the time as to how we are behaving. Are we?
But this president is behaving in alignment with the goals and objectives that he stated when he ran for office and was elected. I don't see him doing anything different.
But those goals from the beginning, we had substantial objection to those goals, and nothing was done about it. He's not
as true
he's elected
the
as a leader,
Lincoln
not as a dictator.
In Iraq and the attack in Libya. I mean, I think what's good for the goose is good for the gander. I'm not a Trump supporter, but I'm very fearful of using terms like off-kilter. I would rather there be specific charges made against a president, and I haven't heard that here. What I'm hearing is not dime store evaluation of mental capacity. None of us are professionals in that arena, and even there's dispute and contradiction among professionals. There is a mechanism to address the problem that you raise. The question
even
is whether
the professionals,
the public should be involved.
Marty, are saying he's off kilter.
Who's saying
the
he's off the kilter?
Professionals are saying he's off kilter. And it
Wait,
is not necessarily
I don't want
to
support
to
Donald Trump,
it's,
but I can't accept the version of an unnamed source and people who are.
Well, this is a
books,
National Association of Psychiatrists.
Who may have violated their oaths and their standard of practice because none of
not
them have evaluated
them.
The president.
Their
My wife is a social worker and psychiatrist.
They have made the case, and they've called it a duty to warn. A duty to warn. They saw it as their duty to warn the country that the observations of the president's behavior lead them to conclude that he ought to be psychiatrically evaluated. That's on the basis
right.
of their duty to warn. They were clear. They were not empowered and they're not authorized to make any definitive conclusion about the president's state of health mentally. But they had put together this report, a substantial report, which I shared with the audience, that said there are more than enough indications in the president's conduct, in his behavior, in his actions, that would suggest he is in immediate need of some kind of psychiatric care. And they published the report in the spirit of their duty to warn. That's what
but
they said.
But there has been an established process for them to have exercised that duty if they are a part of the cabinet. They could have convinced the vice president and two-thirds majority, and ultimately you need two-thirds the majority of the House. But eight cabinet members and one vice president coming to the same conclusion that all of these people, pundits on television, book writers, and associations come to, that's all we would need. And the situation would be addressed. Somehow we're trying to usurp what is in place, and I'm not quite sure why, because I feel uncomfortable.
The cabinet members, I think we could agree, are not going to be able, more than likely, to definitively earmark what they see as giveaways about the president's mental condition.
But you're using
these
mental condition, and the only allowable change is for an unable to fulfill his or her duties. Are you saying that Donald Trump cannot fulfill the duties of the office of president?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying
there's no mechanism for what you're suggesting, which is the dangerous
the mechanism
part, because you're not...
I wouldn't agree. The mechanism in the Constitution, the 25th Amendment.
25th Amendment, Section 4
right.
of that amendment spells out what should be done if the president is unable to fulfill duties. That
yes, but it is not,
and
as you would
capacity.
Agree, if you read it, first of all, it is not comprehensive. It is not specific. It does
but
not
neither,
give specific
neither is the diagnosis from an association
about the president's
from
behavior. It says only that at least eight members of the cabinet should agree that this is a matter that should be referred to Congress to remove the president. We do not have, if I'm asking you now, if you have the advantage of having seasoned experts warning you, telling you what we are seeing indicates the president is already on a slippery slope and the country will suffer. The security of the country is at stake. If that is not enough, to get people to say, well, wait a minute, let's deal with this. You could deal with it privately
at first. Every president has been on a slippery slope if they've been confronted with military action, corruption. I mean,
but that's not the argument.
There has never been a controversial issue that one side could not have claimed that the other was out of kilter or had a mental incapacitation.
That is not even a good argument. There's never been this and there's never been that. The fact is, this is the case.
Abolitionists.
Here are the
crazy
reasons we believe that this president is in need of immediate help. Here are our reasons for believing that the president is the security of the nation is at risk. We even had in this book by Woodward coming out on the 11th. We even had admissions from high-level military people within the administration talking about having to steal documents.
That I had to steal a document because of the following risk to the society or country?
Or let me ask you this.
No.
Analysis. The Berrigan brothers were absolutely, totally wrong.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you were saying. My apologies.
The Berrigan brothers, Father Berrigan,
right,
was absolutely, totally, and unforgivably wrong in trying to stop the Vietnam War.
That's a different issue than the removal of a publicly elected official. They were performing civil disobedience, and they were willing to pay the price for that. That's different.
But they had
from
to,
saying
to
the leader
that,
is
they had
unfit.
They had to expose the clear and present danger, which was contained in all these documents.
And that's the outcome, the success was the knowledge was spread. And elections were affected, but I mean, who at that point claimed instead that the president was crazy for taking those actions?
Oh, a lot of people said it, but they were
precisely,
not regarded
but,
as professionals.
And what was the mechanism? For removal of the president?
Well, here's what we really need to be deciphering because we're going to be all over the place in count and counterpoint. The fact is, we have had so far many groups of professionals in the field of psychiatry, and in the field of psychology, warning us that we are on the cusp of something irreversible if we do not do something to interfere with the path that the president seems to be going on.
That argument holds for climate change, yet not everybody is moving immediately to stop automobiles.
We're not talking about climate change. We're talking here about...
It's a clear and present danger, right? There are differing opinions about the cause. One side could easily make the claim that the other side is denying it and that they're crazy. I have trouble.
No, you see, you're talking apples and oranges here and equating them. It's not such a thing.
I know you've been very gracious with your time, and I'm going to hang up and let the others speak and join the conversation. But I would just like to leave presenting this for food for thought. The people who have published articles, written books, and have evidence, according to them, provided evidence that somehow the president is unfit for office, should be allowed to present that to the vice president, to the cabinet, in a way that fulfills the obligations of the Constitution. Because as we see, when we make up tactics to deal with things that we disagree with, they come back to bite us. The hearings on the Supreme Court are a good example. All sorts of what I would call maneuvers when they help our side, and I count myself as being on your side in this in his determination of fitness, but I want to do it in a way, because I think right now 33% of the people are going to go down with the president no matter what. 33% are against him no matter what. It's the 33% in the middle, and I don't think taking shortcuts and pseudoscience and not following an established procedure is going to be helpful to the country long term. We have had people who've had diagnosable mental illness in office previously, and we've gotten by it. We've had people, this is different, I guess, if you say we have the atomic or nuclear bombs, but he's not the only one that's going to give that order. And they're letting us know that you know, they're adults in the room. We got to do it right if he's to be removed, or we have to defeat him the way he won at the ballot box. Marty from Connecticut.
Well, you raised some very, very valid points, and let's see how people react to them. I really appreciate your input, and hopefully we'll continue to have a chat. We'll continue to talk about this issue. But I think you've made your points very clear, and I think from the business of debating, I think you have laid out your points very well. Thanks so much, Marty, for your call. Phil from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hello there. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, Phil.
I'm in agreement with the previous caller. I think that in the current climate, we have a lot of people that have an axe to grind, because they don't like Trump. They don't like, how he's doing things. I also am not a Trump supporter. However, I'm also troubled by this notion that the guy, because I don't think he's crazy. I think that he acts in a way that, people think that he's crazy, but it's not like he's not making some things happen, whether you agree with those particular, things or not. Also, what I would say is that in conjunction with what we have going on now, we've been having a concerted effort to undermine the president. The Russia probe, we haven't seen any evidence whatsoever. The people that have been convicted or have taken guilty pleas are for things that have nothing to do with collusion with Russia. Additionally, more and more evidence is surfacing that there's been some kind of, for all intents and purposes, a conspiracy to undermine the president. You have numerous FBI people that have been fired or that have quit. So, I mean, and this is my criticism kind of for people that are on the so-called left. It's not like they're actually looking into all of this and trying to make sense of it.
But, I understand your argument and your point, but at somewhere in all of that, I think your aim is a little bit off the bullseye. The issue here has to do, this is the way it is addressed in the Constitution, the inference being that the head of state, who is the leader of the country, and who has come to be the position, has come to mean the leader of the so-called free world and all of that. It's an awesome amount of power. And there are many ways to check that power.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we know the legislative process and so forth, which is normal. But this, even back when the 25th Amendment was written and enacted, it was very controversial back then, which is why one of the reasons it really hasn't been used to check the power of a president for all kinds of reasons. Because you're talking here of the inference being that in order for the 25th Amendment to be seen as valid in its application, you almost have to assume and you almost have to be prepared to defend yourself against the accusation that the president is off, I've used the word off kilter, but that the president has psychological and other issues that would impair his sound judgment about things. We have had a couple of things happen here under this president. And the mother of all bombs was dropped, despite the public affirmation by the military. They will not do anything that they considered against typical practice and principles of the military. They did it. So having the safeguard and having the pledge of military brass that they won't do anything that really defies the long-held standards and beliefs for war and weapons of war, it was done. And it was not just under, it was just not under Trump alone. We had it under Obama. We had it at the Vietnam War. What do you call that? They did it. So the part of the 25th Amendment that people are looking to, it is not the only thing that they're looking to. When Congressman Al Green from Texas submitted his first articles of impeachment, the president's state of mind was not mentioned. He talked about legal aberrations that were occurring under the president that, in his mind, call for articles of impeachment to be lodged against him. So the question of the president's state of mind, and we have seen it time and again, and especially in recent months, being corroborated that the president's conduct and behavior are of great concern to legislators, to allies of the United States, to citizens of the United States, and it seems as if nobody's doing anything about it.
Well, it seems to me that people are doing something about it, because all of these people that you're mentioning, the individual with the articles of impeachment, the so-called experts that are saying that he's crazy, the news media circling the wagons and sort of getting on board with that, that's people doing something. But,
no, but the articles of impeachment had nothing to do, so far,
well,
the ones I read, calling his mental state into question.
Yeah, but Utrecht, you know, the opinion of the public matters, because your own personal view, right, is directly related to what you see and what you consume. Because you don't know Donald Trump personally. You don't hang out with him, do you?
No, not at all.
Okay, and so, and then the other part, the other point I want to make is that that actually should give you pause, right? Especially in light of all of the other stuff that's going on that has yet to be hashed out. You know,
well, I didn't personally hang out with Donald Trump, but I'm from New York.
I'm from New York,
and
too.
And I've covered Donald Trump.
I know about the whole thing with the Central Park Five. I'm not coming out in support of Trump. But what I'm really speaking to is the thought process that people are using, right? And the assumptions that they're making in light of a situation where we have we have an obvious attempt to undermine the power of the presidency with, number one, an allegation about Russian collusion. I mean, and everything that they've put out there is just, it's just ridiculous. I mean, Facebook ads? I mean, come on.
Yeah, well, you may, it may be crazy to you and me, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And it hasn't been used as a tactic in undermining the president. You know, in the world of spying, you have people just sitting on a bench in a park in London, and next thing you know, they're dead from poisoning.
Actually, neither one of them died. They got sick, but neither one of them died. What happened was 5 months later, right, two people supposedly found the container that the spies used. I mean, that doesn't even make any sense. 5 months later, they find a package? Like, what?
In the world of spying, you are not a spy. I'm not a spy. But in the world of spying, espionage, that's perfectly fine.
We both have common sense, though.
There's no such thing as common sense in the world of espionage.
Okay. I mean, you know, what I'm saying is you got to use some kind of reasoning, right, to sort of look at these things. You know, you're a big proponent of media literacy.
Yes.
Analyzing what it is that you see, what's being told to you. I mean, you know, I've listened to you on BAI for, like, forever. So I'm like, what is she talking about?
What but I'm talking what? About
I'm
is
leave, I'm going to leave it there so somebody else can, like, you know, chime in, okay?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Phil. Excellent points that you raised, and I appreciate the fact that you defended yourself so well. Thank you so much. David, you are going to be our last caller, and we're really, really, really tight on time.
You know, as I look at this discussion that we've been having, it makes me think of the time in history when those so-called medical professionals or psychiatric people would say that a person who is enslaved as a chattel slave, if he wanted to be free, he was crazy. So as I look at it with Donald Trump, I look at him as crazy like a fox. And for most presidents, as I look at it, they don't function in the interests of the masses of people in the country. They are chief executives of an empire and function in the interests of the empire as it exists and maintaining the status quo one way or the other. So I don't get tied up in all the other things that people are talking about. I don't have any particular president that I like. From Roosevelt on, all of them have big faults and are dangerous people who do what is necessary to maintain a worldwide empire and exploit people all over the world.
Very well put. And thank you for bringing the program to a close today on a high note. Thank you all for putting your points forward. I really appreciate the thought that you've given to support your point of view and your willingness to engage, because this is really where it's at. Thank you so much. We'll see each other tomorrow. It's going to be, of course, our favorite Free Your Mind Friday. Bye-bye.